Hi, ich bin Elie Chevillet. Herzlich willkommen bei Queer Voices, der Podcast, der queere Stimmen lauter macht. Today, I'm very honored to welcome Fatou to the show. Fatou comes from the Gambia, a West African country surrounded by Senegal. Queerness is still criminalized in the Gambia, a painful legacy of British colonial rule. Queer people risk being imprisoned for life. Like the majority of the population in the Gambia, Fatou grew up in a Muslim family. She trained and graduated as a nurse at the Gambia College. But her life changed completely when her family found out that she had a girlfriend. What followed is a journey of violence, betrayal, and survival. In 2023, Fatou was nearly killed for being herself. She escaped the Gambia, first to Senegal, then Romania, and finally Germany, where she's still fighting to stay safe. Today, she faces the threat of deportation to a country where her life is in danger. Fatou's story is extremely tough, but it's one that needs to be heard. This episode includes mentions of physical violence, sexual abuse, forced migration, and deportation. Hi, Fatou. Thanks a lot for being here today. I deeply appreciate it.
I'm very happy to be here myself. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Want to quickly share who you are, your pronouns, and how you identify?
Like you already mentioned, my name is Fatou from Gambia. I'm 26, a registered nurse. I identify as bisexual because even though rare, but at least few times have been attracted to a man, so that's why I just identify as bisexual.
Mm-hmm. You grew up in Fadjikunda in the west coast region of the Gambia. As a kid, what was that like for you?
Growing up, they would refer to it as structure, but it was more of pressure because you had to live your everyday life through rules and so much expectation, which leaves you almost no room to question or be yourself. Yeah, so from what you have to wear, how you have to behave, every single thing was based on rules. Nothing about what you really want. So as a child, sometimes I would say I didn't really have a childhood. I wasn't allowed to have friends, and whenever friends would come over to my house, they would be sent away. Most of the times by my dad, he would always say they're bad influence and all of that. Even when you were outside the house, you couldn't do much because coming from a very religious family where your dad leads people in prayers, they don't just look up to him, but also to his children. So it was a constant fear of who is watching, what would I do that someone would say, oh, this person's daughter. And it was something that my dad most especially wasn't joking about. You were either doing what he wants or you're going to face the punishment. There was no single mistake that was left not treated. Being beaten so badly was a normal thing where you can't even speak up or look for help because where do you want to ask for it? In Gambia, if you complain about your parents, it's more like painting yourself as a bad child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I had half sisters that I really don't know well. They're much older than me, and I've heard stories about how each and everyone disappeared one by one. I do have two younger sisters. One, I haven't seen her since 5-6 years ago because she wasn't very good with school and my dad said she had to get married. Through the course of that push and pull, she disappeared and no one has seen her since then.
So she ran away in order not to get married this person?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fatou, what does being queer mean to you?
Being queer to me means freedom. It means being yourself, being your authentic self. Actually, it means loving who you want to love, being in a community where difference is celebrated and not feared. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When did you first realize you were queer?
So there was this point in my life, I was around 18, when obviously all of a sudden I have all this, what if, is it? So it started as a thought where I could deeply feel that yes, I was attracted to my gender. So I was very curious about it, but still very unsure. At the same time, based on what you grew up as. So it was me telling myself that I was a disgrace, I was ashamed to the family, and all of as much as I tried to confirm if that's what I am. So in school one time, that was my first year in college, I had this friend who was actually also bisexual, but I didn't know. Until a day where she came to my room, one thing led to another, and I actually did confirm that, yeah, mm-hmm. I am into girls. Mm-hmm.
So you were 18?
Yeah.
Fatou, did you grow up with queer role models?
No.
Did you even know that queerness was a thing or a possibility?
Yes. It's the 21st century, as much as Gambia doesn't accept it. Obviously, it's a modern world, social media and all of that. I knew it was normal in some places, just not in the Gambia.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to say to your younger self?
First, I would apologize to my younger self. Because I have allowed my younger self feel less, feel not worthy, not beautiful. I have given people access to hurt my younger self. So today I tell my younger self, you're enough, you're beautiful, you're normal. Yeah, you're very normal. You're not shame, you're not a disgrace. You are just a person who likes what she likes.
Mm-hmm. How was queerness present in your everyday environment in the Gambia?
Although queerness is not accepted in the Gambia, but it existed. Even if it's from little gestures, soft glances, or short conversations, it existed. So I had a group of friends actually, where people thought we were just a group of girls that likes to hang out together, be around each other and all that. But I wouldn't say it was our community because we never identified it, but it was just a group of people that we do everything together where no one judges anyone, no one sees you different or anything like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you have spaces where you could meet?
We could hang out anywhere. It was really hard for anyone to suspect, honestly. It was very hard for anyone to, like, suspect. Because it's normal in Gambia to have a friend group where you guys hang out, do everything together. So it wasn't something that was really suspicious.
Does the word community mean something to you?
Yeah, it does. Community to me means belonging, being around a group of people that you chose as a family, where you know you don't have to hide any part of you. You wouldn't be judged. It's normal. Like I said, this is a family you chose.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that your dad was very religious.
Yes.
Is religion also a context where community had a meaning?
I am not a very religious person myself, but yeah, it does.
Did your family belong to a community?
So it was usually more of all these religious groups where they either do this donations and all of that, and all this daira. There's this thing in Gambia we call daira. It's an Islamic something that is done where Islamic religious men would come, they would read the Quran from night till the morning and all that. Yeah.
Was that happening at your place?
Mostly, yes, because my dad would always be the frontline man for all of that stuff. He was like a leader.
Mm-hmm.
In the community.
Mm-hmm.
He leaded people in prayers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did he become a leader?
He was chosen.
What does that mean?
So, I don't know. You're taking me back to history. It is this thing where there are families who this imam would always come from. Unless and until there was probably another family who has an older person that now it has to shift. It was more like a title.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a title that stays with certain families.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it stayed in the family.
Yeah. If this person, unfortunately, maybe something happened, the person is no more, it moves on to the next person in line.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Back in the Gambia, you were in a relationship with another woman.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to tell us how you met your girlfriend?
Yeah, absolutely. So, my girlfriend, we used to be in the same promotion group because we had this group that we promote. So I was actually the founder of this, but she did came over, said she wants to join. We promote people's shows and events for them, or sometimes we host it and all of that. So this was how she said she was interested.
What kind of shows were that?
Any. It depends. Whatever event you have that has to do with earning, we try to promote it and reach out to the kind of audience you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So she joined the promotion crew and we started spending time together a lot. At first, it was me seeing her with a girl, and I'm mad. I don't know why I'm mad. Or it was her seeing me with a girl and she's pissed. I don't know why she is. So, yeah, there was a day we hanged out and we hanged out with some of my friends. And all of a sudden she was mad. She said, I'm leaving. I'm like, what's wrong? Oh, how can you bring me here in the midst of people I don't know? You're not even focusing on me. It's as if I'm just here, but I'm not here. I was like, no, but why are you? Can't you see that I like you? So I just left my friends behind. I was like, you know what? Then how about we just live together then? And this was how we left. That particular time, it was far from home. So we were lodged in an apartment where we sat, we spoke. That's how it happened. That's how it happened.
How old were you?
I was 20.
Mm-hmm. In 2023, you and your girlfriend got caught by your family. Would you like to share what happened and the journey that followed?
Yeah. So during that time, my mom's younger sister, my aunt, gave birth. So my mom and my younger sister were going to the program. I was also supposed to go, but these are programs that I don't really like being at. Already my girlfriend was over to her house for weekend because they thought she was just my friend. Already my dad also had some religious program at our village where he's also the alcalde. He left for that. He was supposed to be back on Sunday. So my aunt's program was on Saturday. My mom already left and I thought we were home alone. I wasn't expecting my dad to return on Saturday instead of on Sunday. So we were there and we were lying in a position where no one needs questions. It would just explain itself. He came because he had his own key. He came in and met us in a situation which he didn't even need an explanation. Yeah, so my girlfriend was so scared, she just ran and left, and my dad started with the whole shouting, "You're a disgrace. I wish I never had you as a child." You know, all of that. Then he walked out of my room, so I followed to our sitting room, which was upstairs. It was like a downstairs sitting room, upstairs sitting room. So he was holding a broken bottle that he picked. That was how he cut me on my hand. And I was bleeding. And I can vividly remember him telling me he would be so happy to see me bleed to death. There was blood all over from that cut. And the next thing was he was trying to cut me on my neck, where we started pushing and pulling, and I fell from the upstairs sitting room down. All of a sudden, I realized both my legs just went numb. It was as if I couldn't just feel or move my legs anymore. I screamed. So some neighbors ran over to our house. Some of them took me to the hospital because my legs were literally dead, where I found out that I had paraparesis due to trauma. I was in the hospital and every single day was me being scared when he would just show up there, because he has tried a couple of times but he was not allowed in. He would call me and tell me that he would either kill me or hand me over to the police. So I had to leave. That day I requested to be discharged. The doctors did make it clear to me that I was in no condition to leave the hospital. I was like, it's fine. I will sign it as self-discharge against medical advice, which I did. And one of my friends picked me from the hospital straight to the border between Gambia and Senegal. I boarded the bus. At some point, I wanted to use the restroom because the bus didn't leave on time. I was struggling with the walking aid when the lady sat right next to me was like, "But are you alone?" I said, "Yeah." She was like, "You are in no condition to be traveling alone. Let me help you to the restroom." So she helped me to the restroom, where she asked again, "Why are you traveling alone in this condition?" I broke down and I explained everything to her. And she was like, "But do you know where you are going to in Senegal? Do you have family or friends there that are expecting you?" I said, "No, I just want to be out of Gambia for now. At least I'll know I'm safe." She was like, "But that's not safe. You're a girl. Are you thinking of staying on the street? It's not safe for you." And she said, "Well, I can accommodate you at my place for a few days, but I also have kids that are girls and they are grown, and I do not want to make them feel being queer it's normal, because I wouldn't want any of my kids to be like that. I agreed. I followed her home that day. I was there for a couple of times where my leg was a total mess, but I couldn't do anything. The option was physiotherapy, which was very expensive because each session was actually really expensive. So it was more of getting me painkillers for me to take just to cope. And I started going with her to her local restaurant, where at first she didn't even want me to because of my legs. I was like, it's okay. And one fateful day, this Romanian man came to the local restaurant with, I think, work colleagues or business partners, I don't know, to eat. When he asked me why I was, you know, working in that condition, I said, actually, it's no work. I'm just here to help the lady. And he was like, but you're in no condition to be doing any of that. I said, it's fine. So through this conversation, I explained everything to him. And he became a friend. He became someone that listens when I talk. And I was very grateful when he took me to the hospital, paid for my physiotherapy for a month. And he promised me, I would always be here to help you and make sure that you get back on your feet. So we were there when the lady one day said, if I had figured out what to do, because she already did tell me I cannot stay with her forever. I was like, okay, so this Romanian guy actually got an accommodation for me. I was there and then he was like, for how long do you think you can hide here? Because even Senegal doesn't accept being queer. So it's not safe here. I could have helped, but the only way that I can help right now is maybe if we get married on paper, then I can easily help you to leave this place. Because if not, I don't know how else I'll be able to help you leave. So I agreed, which we did, and I went to the embassy in Senegal there, where I got visa. I got the visa, and during that time, he was also constantly being unwell. Said it was burnout from work or so. So he said he would also travel to Romania for a better medical treatment. So we got to Romania. At first, I thought he was just being protective of me. He just cares about me. That's why he was always like, I can't go out and all that. But later on, it started becoming very aggressive. At first, it was a slap. And then he started going out a lot, coming back home drunk. Forcefully having sex with me, even against my will. But he lived with his mom, who is in her 70s. I barely even saw the mom because whenever he's going out, he locks me in his own side of the apartment. They didn't share an apartment. It was like two apartments in a house. Until this kept going on and on and on, until the mom, one day when he left, opened the door and came and was like, run as fast as your legs can take you. I've had this spare kiss for a long time. I think he doesn't know. He's in a horrible state and you're very young. You shouldn't be going through things like this. This was how, but luckily for me, I had my passport. I just grabbed my passport and my luggage and I left the rest of the things there. So I had my luggage. I was just going as fast as I can until I got to this place that looked like a town square or something. I sat on those big statues round about there. I sat there. After an hour, a guy walked up to me and was like, are you lost? Do you need direction to a location? I was like, no, I'm fine, thank you. He left. But this place had a couple of restaurants around it, and he went back to his seat. After like 2 hours again, he came walking towards me. When I saw his friends, he was like, they should go, he would catch up late. He came, he was like, are you sure you are okay? Because you've been sitting here for like 3 hours now. Is there a problem? Just let me know. If you're looking for a location, I will help you get there. And this was where I was like, just leave me alone. I don't just have anywhere to go. That is why I'm seated here. It's not like I'm trying to look for a place to go. He was like, what do you mean you don't have anywhere to go? I told him that I just ran away from a man that brought me here and has been abusing me and all that. At first, I didn't want to explain it to him, but when he told me that he was a firefighter from Italy, that he's Italian, he was there on a mission, I felt safe enough to just tell him everything I did. And he was like, okay, so what do you plan on doing? I said, I guess I'll have to go back to Senegal. He was like, but that's not safe. It's as if you're just going back to what you came from. Do you have any family in Europe? My cousin in the family, I'm the only person he speaks to. I was like, yes, but I don't have my cousin's number right now. But he's on Facebook. So we reached him through Facebook, where he also put me in a hotel. We reached my cousin through Facebook and he shared his number, and I called him. I explained everything to him. And he was like, you know what? Just come to Germany. Because going back to Africa right now, it's not a solution. So this was how I came to Germany. This was how I got to Germany. And I was with my cousin for a couple of days before I went to apply for asylum.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to tell us about the journey from Romania to Germany and how you arrived here?
Yeah. Mauro, which is this Italian firefighter that helped me out, he first of all booked me a flight to Italy, because those few days I was talking to his mom, his sister. The mom would always call me, you know, try to talk to me to tell me everything would be okay. So I stopped by Italy for like a day, where I met his mom and his sister before my cousin now booked my ticket to Karlsruhe, because he lived in Baden-Baden. That's how I flew to Karlsruhe.
Thank you for sharing your story with us.
No problem.
So you arrived in Germany last June?
Yes.
What is your life like here?
Every day is uncertainty, because at first I thought I was at least safe now, but now I'm being asked to go back to Romania, where I could also be taken back to Senegal or Gambia. So it's just everyday uncertainty. You're not sure what's the next thing that's going to happen. But I can say one thing for sure. It has been the most safe 4 months of my life. Even if I end up being sent out, these 4 months have been quite safe for me. I got to join the community where I met nice people. People who never judged me or looked at me differently. So I would still say it will be the best 4 months of my life since 2023.
Mm. You mean that you were able to meet people in the queer community?
Yes. Yes, where I made particularly two good friends. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Fatou, do you feel free as a queer person in Germany?
Yes, absolutely. I have never been this free as a queer, even though a few times I have experienced this queer phobia, not actually from any other nationality, but people from Gambia that also lives in the asylum camp with me. They have maybe once or twice, you know, show me that being queer is haram. It's against our religion, against our upbringing and all that. But it's not something that really bothers me because it's not new. I just brush it off.
Mm. Would you like to tell us more about your relationship with your cousin here?
My cousin is one person. If the family talks about, they would say the two of us are very similar. We're like birds. We don't like to be caged. I think that is why we do have a really good relationship because he has been here for like 10 years plus and he doesn't communicate with people from the family. It was just me and him communicating and all that. And he has been very supportive of me even before I left Gambia. He was one person that was also very, very supportive of me. He was someone that I could call and talk to. And I would feel okay at the end of the conversation.
Mm. Did you already know you were queer when you were still living in the Gambia?
No, I hid it from him as well. Because I wasn't sure what he might think of it. Even though he's very cool and all that, but I wasn't sure. And he's still mad at me for that. He's still very mad at me for that because he felt we were close enough to be able to talk to him freely.
So he was disappointed that you didn't tell?
Yeah, he was.
Fatou, is there anything else you'd like to share in this podcast?
I don't know, but if anyhow or somehow anyone in Gambia is listening to this podcast and you're queer, I just want you to know there's nothing wrong with you. You are normal. You are just someone that likes what they like. And don't give up on yourself because you have every single right to be your authentic self. You owe nobody an apology for being who you are. And I hope one day in the future, queer people would be able to live freely, without fear, without shame, without the stigma of queerness. I really look forward to that time, years, centuries, I don't know, whenever it happens.
Thanks, Fatou, for this very powerful message. I remember you telling me that your story went viral when you were in Senegal, right?
Yes.
You want to share more about it?
Sure. So there was obviously a social media scandal about it because my father, who is my parent, did not care. He spoke about it because to him, it was better for him to be a better religious leader than being a parent. So he told people the reason why I left. And this became a topic because in Gambia, it's not something normal. People started doing TikTok lives, talking about it. It went to an extent where he even told them that I stole from him before leaving. And this whole thing was going on every single time that I would come across this on social media, it would break me. People were just talking about it nonstop. That's why I also had to delete my social accounts for some time. Yeah. So it was a scandal on social media. Scrolling through it and your picture is being hung there. You're being spoke about.
Thank you for sharing this as well.
Thank you.
Fatou, before we wrap up, I have a little ritual for every Queer Voices guest. A rapid fire round of questions.
Okay.
Would you be up for it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, let's go. The quality you appreciate most in someone else?
Honesty.
Your greatest quality?
Fierce.
What helps you find strength?
My past.
Something that made you proud lately?
This podcast.
Nice. A song that you love?
Cry by Majid.
Your favorite food?
Yassa ganar. I'm not sure if you know what that is, but it's called Yassa ganar.
I don't know what it is. Can you tell me?
It's a Gambian. Yeah. It's a Gambian dish. It's like chicken, but very seasoned, like really, really seasoned with onion sauce and rice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you been able to cook it here?
Yes.
Cool. A content you'd recommend?
This one right here.
Thank you. One big wish you have?
I hope I can have freedom and live a normal life. Again, this is what I have been yearning for since 2023. And I just hope I would just get a chance to live a very normal life here.
I wish that for you too.
Thank you very much.
And your mood right now?
Bravo. Wunderbar.
Thank you so much, Fatou, for your time and for sharing your story with us.
Thanks a lot, Ellie, for having me here.
It's an honor.